Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar, chase your destiny. By Premium Plus Sports, official travel partner of the Tough Man Triathlon Series. By USA-SwimRun.com. If you haven't tried a swim run event, definitely give it a try. Our Challenge Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million to keep challenge athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, she is a two-time Olympian and coming off of a phenomenal race at Ironman Frankfurt, where she took second and had the fastest marathon of the day for the women. Her name is Sarah True. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Hey, so Sarah, obviously coming off of, you know, fourth place at 2012 Olympics, that next 4 years, I'm sure the motivation was, hey, 10 seconds, man, I could get on that podium. That's dedicating 4 years to go back. How tough was that?
I think if you have a really good goal, it's not tough. It's something that, invigorates you and makes you excited. Those 4 years go by pretty quickly.
Well, and then you go to Rio and had cramping. It was not the day you wanted to have, especially after 4 years, investing 4 years into it. Coming off of Rio, at that point, did you feel like, okay, this Olympic draft format has been awesome? I've had my Olympic experience. Now it's time to move on.
Yeah, I definitely came around to that. I realized that I didn't have, I didn't want to put another 4 years in. The next Olympic cycle is about, I'd love to see Ben be able to make a team and the 5K or 10K. I'd love to be there to support him, but also I had long course ambitions that I wanted to fulfill. And, I loved my time being an ITU athlete, but it requires, a lot of travel. It's a big investment, and lifestyle-wise, it's a little easier to be training by yourself doing the long course stuff.
Well, and the hard part is for the ITU's racing, there's really nothing in the States, right? You have to live in Europe and Asia and be traveling the whole year.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I definitely got a lot out of that phase of my career. For triathlon, that's only a small component of the sport. So there was this whole other side that, I felt like my story in triathlon wouldn't be complete without spending some time in the long course world.
Well, it's interesting. When I've interviewed a Hunter Kemper, four-time Olympian over the years, it's saying, okay, Hunter, so now you've done the Olympic distance, you're going to move up to 70.3. He's like, no interest whatsoever. I'm not carrying gels. I'm not the eating and drinking and all the rest of that. That's not why I do this. I want to go fast. I want to be done in an hour and 45 minutes, and that's it. For you, you had done a 70.3, I think, back in 2009. So was that always in the back of your mind that this is phase one, but my career will be moving on after this?
Yeah, the good thing about, so 2009, I did a couple of half Ironman races. I did 70.3 Worlds, and I was seventh that year. So I knew I had that in my back pocket, and it was just a matter of time before I would come back around to doing the longer course racing. I knew I was good at it. I still had Olympic ambitions. I wanted to focus on that. So it was really just a question of when, not if, for me. And it's just the timing was good last year in the spring to transition over. I didn't really have an incredibly strong push to, because I just know how much it takes to prepare properly for an Ironman. And last year, I wasn't quite at that point. About October last year, though, all of a sudden it just hit me that next year, the goal is to qualify for Kona.
Wow.
Honestly, it was a light bulb moment, total epiphany. You know, I cannot be part of this sport without going and racing in Kona. I've never been there. The way I want to go is to race. So, you know, that's been my driving ambition this year. And, you know, obviously it was nice to have a good race at Frankfurt and, you know, put together, a good run. But really the ultimate ambition for me was to qualify for Kona. I needed a top seven. For the professionals, it's based on rankings.
Right.
And, you know, I had done well enough in the 70.3 racing. All I needed points-wise was top seven in the regional championship. So that's what we focused on. And, you know, it was funny because my coach, I sat down with him on Friday before the race. And, you know, he's German. He's very, very German.
Yes.
You know, it's straightforward. He's like, Sarah, you're not in the fitness to knock it out of the park, basically. You know, the goal, the ambition is to qualify for Kona. That is all. The next phase, this is when you will get very fit. But this phase, you are probably not fit enough to have an excellent race. So just go out there and qualify. You know, obviously, we had a better day than I expected based on my fitness level. So I'm really excited to see what we can do when he thinks I'm actually fit.
Well, what's fascinating to me, so last year you're at the 70.3 Worlds, and, you know, your swim was, you and Daniela Reif, who now is a three-time world champion, your swim was faster than Daniela's. Your run was basically, 40 seconds slower, something like that, 120.205 to 122.45. Your bike ride was 10 minutes down. Then you go to Frankfurt this year. Like you said, you're there to qualify. You weren't thinking about winning the race. But you got second, and you swam a couple seconds faster than Daniela. You ran 4 minutes faster. And that 10-minute gap in the bike from last year was 20 minutes this year. So, you know, it's sort of predictable. But I'm guessing that you were pretty darn conservative during that bike ride.
Oh, yeah. For anybody who's done their first Ironman, I think the entire time, you can relate to this, the entire time you're just kind of doing the math. Doing the, okay, well, I'm about 3 hours into my bike ride. Oh, my goodness. I still have 5 hours left of racing. I have never raced 5 hours before, and that's what remains. This is crazy. So the entire time is just looming over my head. My longest run going into the race was about 19 miles. I did that once.
Right.
So just knowing that, and it was hot. Traditionally, I'm a much better athlete in the cool conditions. So here I am thinking about the heat, thinking about, did I get my nutrition right? Am I taking enough fluids? I've never run a marathon before. I've heard that you just kind of hit the wall with 10K to go, so I'm really scared of that. So it was just, replaying in my mind, oh, my goodness, I would rather be conservative on
right.
the bike
yep.
and qualify than try to do anything, try to race for a podium and not be able to qualify and just have a disastrous day. That's what I am a student of the sport. I've loved following Ironman over the years, and I've seen enough times where people get a little excited and it costs them the day.
Right.
So I figured I was much better off being patient and being conservative. I realized pretty quickly on the bike that I probably would be top four. If I did things right, I would be top four. But also there's that outlying chance that you do things wrong and you don't finish the race.
That's the thing. It's not like, well, I might fade a little bit. You could fade to eighth or ninth, and then it's like, oh, my God, now I have to do another race to
right.
hopefully get my points for Kona. So don't mess up.
Yeah, so, I think it didn't really it didn't really take until October for me to come around to, I completely want to do Conan. I'm absolutely committed. Until I understood better my position points wise. So my fear had always been that, you know, having been a fan of Ironman, I'd watched too many athletes, really good athletes, do multiple Ironman races to be able to qualify for Kona. And that was the last thing I wanted to do. I didn't want to have to do, you know, two or three Ironman races in order just to show up in the start line, because it's, I don't have those years of long course base under me. I knew I could only do potentially up to two Ironmen and do them pretty well. More than that, I just didn't have the belief that I could show up to Kona in a good position to have a great race, unless it was only with one Ironman behind me. So, you know, because I had a good race in 70.3 Worlds, that just set me up that if I had another solid 70.3 race and, you know, a pretty good Ironman, that I could do it only racing one Ironman in anticipation of Kona. So, yeah, I did not want to have to walk the marathon. And then 2 weeks later, my backup plan was to go to Lake Placid. And before the race, you know, I was talking to I had my dad come over to Frankfurt to help me out. My husband wasn't able to come. And I knew that I probably would need some help and support after the race.
Yeah, you
before
think?
The race, yeah, before the race, talking to my dad, it's like, okay, so what happens if this doesn't go well? Well, Dad, in 2 weeks is Lake Placid. And he just looked at me and said, no, you can't be serious. Yeah, I'm absolutely serious. As long as, you know, I don't hurt myself and, you know, I'm in okay position to do it, I am absolutely going to show up and do an Ironman 2 weeks later. And he just thought that was the craziest thing he'd ever heard. And I am glad that I am currently not in Lake Placid getting ready for an Ironman. We'll put it that way.
Well, what's so interesting about that is it's funny how mentality changes. If somebody told you while you're in the midst of your ITU career that, you know what, when you make that move to the next, to the 70.3, just forgetting about Ironman, 70.3, you're going to do 7, 8, 9 of those in a year. And so you're racing 8 or 9 half marathons. I mean, that just that is, you tell that to a runner, you tell that to Ben, that, yeah, the way these guys make a living in this triathlon thing is they do, you know, at least 5, 6, 70.3s a year. And you're like, oh my God, world class, running a hard half marathon after that, 6, 7 times. It just seems, it's mind boggling to me.
Yeah. Well, I do think if you look at the top performers, and maybe some of the exceptions, there's some people who just race a lot and are able to do it consistently well. But if you look like at a Jan or a Danielle,
yep,
they race sparingly,
yes,
and they make it count. So I think there is this mentality in long course race, mostly I think because of financials. There's financial pressure to race more because we're not making a lot of money each race.
Right.
But, you know, people who, if you can choose, you race less frequently. So this year, I have had to take, you know, it's a big financial blow for me not to be going out every month and doing 70.3. So I've raced 3 times this year. I could potentially only race 5 times this year. And I see some of my peers going out racing every 3 weeks,
yep,
doing 70.3s, but I'm trying to invest in a great Kona performance.
Yes.
And that requires me making big adaptations that I can't do if I'm racing. So if I'm, you know, you say you do one 70.3 a month, you have to, it's going to be, that's basically your entire month. Because you have probably a week and a half of taper. I found that it takes about a week and a half to 2 weeks to fully recover to be back doing workouts.
Yep.
So that's 3.5 weeks. You will gain fitness by racing. But it's a trade-off, right? So even if I have, unless I have a spectacular Kona performance and I'm top three, financially, I would have been way better off this year racing more frequently. And do you go all in and try to make it count for the big ones, or do you race more frequently and you're assured a decent income? So I understand why athletes do it. I don't think it's the best for performance. You know, there's a reason why the best distance runners in the world only do a few half marathons or marathons a year.
Right. Yeah, it's always blown me away because you get with the point thing. Because back in the day, someone like a Karen Smyers, who had never, she came to Kona based on, she was invited, right? She had never run a marathon. Same with Luke Van Leerde, who ended up breaking the course record first time out. They were invited to come because they were on the world stage, they were ranked high. So it wasn't you have to qualify, you have to validate. And so now you're getting, sometimes you're seeing people doing 3, 4, and 5 Ironmans to get to Kona, to get enough points. And you right away, you go down the list and see someone who's done 5 Ironman, and you're going, okay, they're not going to be a factor on race day unless something totally bizarre happens, because you can't run 5 marathons in a year and be successful.
It takes too much of a toll on your body. And, I think you probably could do a few, successfully do a few Ironman, full course, full distance races in the course of the year and do them really well. But if you see the people who are doing an Ironman in July, one in August, just trying to squeak in points-wise for Kona, I have yet to see somebody do that and turn around for October and have a really great race.
No, you're
a race that's reflective of their ability.
Well, and if you, from a historical perspective, when you look at the classic Iron War, Dave Scott, Mark Allen, 1989, Dave had done Ironman Japan that year. That was the first time he had ever done another Ironman. Mark Allen had not done another Ironman. And then the other guys in the field, Scott Tinley, Ray Browning, Ken Glaw, guys like that, were doing a thing called the Ironman World Series, where they got points based on doing 5.
Oh, my.
Yeah, the best was like the best. That's 3 out of, it was the best 3, but a lot of these guys were doing 5. Plus Nice, which was a 3-quarter Ironman, plus other non-branded Ironman events. So there was like 2 races going on. You had a race between Mark and Dave for the Iron War and for the win in Kona, and then you had everybody else racing for the Ironman World Series, and they weren't going to be a factor with 4 marathons in their legs trying to race against Mark Allen and Dave Scott. Not happening, right?
I think the part I hadn't anticipated. So I realized that it was going to take a physical toll.
Yeah.
But I think you forget that it also takes a mental toll to race. You know, for me to race 9 hours, I bounced back physically pretty quickly. But I still feel a little flat because I think mostly you're trying to stay focused for 9 hours. So I think we all only have so much capacity in that regard, that it does take a lot of mental and emotional energy to do an Ironman race. So even if you're physically recovered, those guys who had done 5 Ironman races, by the time they showed up to Kona, they were already a bit mentally drained.
No question.
So there's something to be said about feeling mentally fresh when you go, when you go to the start line for a race that long.
And from covering Ironman and covering marathons forever, there was always a point of diminishing return. I remember there was a great runner by the name of Rob DiCostella. And I remember remember Rob? And so I'm standing at a starting line, and you could look in people's eyes, and guys who'd done 10, 12 marathons by that point, they knew what was in front of them, and you could see that they didn't want to be there. I mean, you could really tell that they were sort of fried and they needed to make that appearance for a sponsor or whatever. I would try to make a living. But and when you come in like you right now, this is all to a certain degree, it's sort of fresh and it's really fun and you're learning every single day. And that's why it's so important to do what you're doing and keep those Ironman races under control and the 70.3s under control, to keep it fresh. And the other side is, there's a tendency to go, okay, I'm an Ironman athlete now, and you replace quality workouts with quantity. and you start doing a lot of long stuff and forget about the speed. And you know how fast these guys are going. You were there at Franklin.
Yeah.
People are riding a bike like they're riding a 40K.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. I've watched the progression of other athletes over time, and it's a really common trend where they start off their carrying speed from being young, and that's their background.
Right.
And to be able to retain that speed, the natural inclination is people get slower. It's very rare that you see an Ironman athlete be able to get faster. They might get more efficient, mm-hmm. but so it's how do you hold on to that? And I was actually completely shocked how much VO2 max stuff we did earlier in the year to invest. I did very little long bike intervals, for example. We just did a lot of short and sharp the front end of the season, because now once I'm completely recovered, the next phase is that longer, strength endurance focus. But I think you're absolutely right. The tendency is for people to say, well, I am an Ironman athlete now, and I'm just going to do long and slow and just get strong. But I've seen far, far too many pros they lose their edge because they lose their speed.
That's a great line. So when I look at Frankfurt, and I'm guessing when you came off the bike, what place were you off the bike?
I was off the bike with Ani Howard, so we're third and fourth.
Okay, so you're at that point. It's just run conservatively. Don't be a hero. Don't do anything silly. Make sure it's hot out here. Make sure I get my fluid in. Make sure I hit every aid station. Going along in the run. A lot of times there's so many ebb and flows with that run where I'm feeling great. Oh, I don't know if I can take another step. Oh, I'm feeling good again. And take me through that run and how you were feeling.
I feel like I had an abnormal experience because I didn't think the run was that bad.
Good.
So I didn't go through any real low points. I think there was a moment where maybe a third of the, three quarters of the way in. So it's a four-lap course, which makes it pretty good to break it up mentally.
Yep, yep.
And I would say I was about, 18 miles in, and I started just to think, okay, well, let's back it off at this point. So I definitely made a concerted effort to back it off a little bit, knowing that I had never run that far.
Right.
And from that point forward, I kept on thinking, this is the longest I've ever run before. Okay, now it's the longest I've ever run before. But I definitely was cognizant of the fact that I had never run that far before, and I was aware that people normally hit the wall, at that point.
Right, so 20 miles, yep.
Better, yeah. I feel like I did a very good job of being conservative and pacing well. So I didn't hit those really low points. I fully expect when I'm in Kona, because of the conditions being what they are, that I will experience more highs and lows. And I'm fully prepared for that. But really, I got off the bike and it was, let's just do the best job that I can do, and maybe I can move up into podium position. I got off the bike with Ani knowing that, this is a woman who's run, I think she's run a 232 marathon.
Yeah.
I knew that. I've seen how much she's been dominating the 70.3 runs. So I was fully aware that, she probably was going to outclass me on the run. So it was just a matter of focusing on myself. And, I thought my race was potentially with Sarah Crowley, to get onto the podium. And I just completely ignored that Ani was in the race. Obviously, Daniela had never been in the race for me once we got onto the bike.
She was in a different stratosphere, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So just a day that long, you have to focus on yourself. If there's somebody that is pacing similarly, then you can use them to cue off of them. But outside the swim, I was alone all day. And I was totally prepared for that mentally. And I knew that if I were able to just, you know, moderate my effort, then I could put together a good performance on the day. And yeah, I was happy because my fueling went well. I just became very process driven and ended up with a good outcome. But I think with the race that long, you kind of have to. That's the name of the game with Ironman.
Yeah, it really is. It's this eating and drinking contest and patience and all of that, which is totally opposite of what you did with the Olympics.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, it's a totally different game. It is, you put your foot on the accelerator when you dive off that dock in the swim, and that's it, right? It's just, it's full on. Now, obviously, there's a lot of strategy during that bike ride in terms of, you know, surging. It's more a criterium format, but still, it is all about, and then you've got people around you the entire time.
Yeah, so the way I... The biggest difference is that the short course racing is reactive, so it's racing. It's,
right.
You're reacting to the people around you. It's all about, you know, it's all relative to other people. So you go out hard from the gun to get to the first buoy first. You know, that's the goal.
Right.
Whereas Ironman, it's completely in. Well, not completely, but it's mostly moderating yourself. And, you know, like I said, if somebody is a similar pace, then you use that to drive your own performance. But it's not a reactive race. It's a very internal one.
And in fact, a lot of times you want to avoid that, right? You see somebody making a big move on the bike and you're like, in ITU, it's somebody's throwing a ball and you're going chasing it, right? And it's like, okay,
yeah,
but there's a ball, right. Go get it. With this, it's like, okay, that's their pace. That's what they know. I need to focus on my pace and not get caught up in what they're doing.
Right. So for short course, I can tell you I never looked at my power once. You know, afterwards we'd look at the files, but there's no reason for you to look at your power because you just have to race.
Right.
You can use the data afterwards to help drive your training, whereas all I did basically for an Ironman was stare at my power. I knew the zones that my coach wanted me to stay in, and that was it. So at one point, Sarah Crowley went by me on the bike. I was looking at my zones. I said, that's not right for me right now. I'm just going to ignore the fact that she rode by me, and I have to refocus on me. It's definitely a different mindset. You know, I absolutely would not have been checking in on my pace every 5K, you know, in Frankfurt to make sure that I wasn't going too hard.
Yeah. 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 You mean if you're, you'd be,
of course, racing.
Right. Yeah. You'd be going as hard as you can. Right.
And you hope you don't blow up. but you blow up in an Ironman and you're walking.
Right.
I have yet to see somebody blow up in an Olympic distance race and walk half the way.
Right. Yeah. And be in a different time zone when you do start walking. So now you got to walk 13 miles or something. Something ridiculous, or get an Uber, get back to town. It's nuts.
Exactly.
So as you're coming down the final stretch there at Frankfurt, and you know that I'm in second place. I'm totally got my spot in Kona. I've just had this great race. What were some of your thoughts?
I think obviously it was nice to be second. It was nice to be on the podium. I think I've enjoyed the training and the process so much more than I expected. So the past few months, I really liked being an Ironman athlete. And I think for me, it was just that sense of completion. You know, I got through an Ironman. I didn't know if I could. And I think that's obviously if you're a 14-hour person or a 9-hour person, it's conquering the distance. And when you can do it well, you know, and for me, well was I got my nutrition right. I got my pacing right. So that's something that's so universal that I really love about this long stuff, is that like I said, the universality of it, it's just finishing it and finishing it to the best of your abilities. So, yeah, like I said, it was nice to be on the podium. You know, I'm happy about that. My sponsors are happy about that. You know, but I checked off the two boxes, which was proving to myself that I could do the distance. And the second one being that I got my Kona spot. The placement was just kind of cherry on top.
So now, you know, good news, bad news. Good news, you qualified for Kona. Bad news, you got to go there and race. But you obviously, as a historian, as somebody who likes looking at the sport, that is the pinnacle. That's the epicenter of the sport. You have not been there, correct?
I've never been there. I wanted to go there and race it. Yeah.
So,
and that's what I'm going to be doing.
I remember the first year Danielle Arif came over. And the philosophy has been, okay, to really understand Kona, you got to come over and do a training camp and get a feel for how the winds are different every day. Because, you know, the thing that makes that course, if you took the course and put it in a bubble, it's a fast course. But there's no bubble. And there's a lot of wind. There's a lot of heat. And probably what makes that race more brutal than any other is there is not one pro on the planet who doesn't want to be there. And every pro who's there is thinking they're going to win or a podium. And that's the deepest, really the competition is what makes that race so amazing, is that level, you don't see it anywhere else. There's not one person going there and going, I'm just coming here to validate, or I'm just coming here, I'm training through this for Ironman Arizona. You know,
yeah.
You know, everybody is there frothing at the mouth, looking to have the greatest day of their life, because it can change lives.
Yeah.
When I was interviewing Danielle Arif, and a lot of people do their camps ahead of time. So I'm interviewing Danielle Arif, and we're, you know, at this restaurant near Ali'i Drive, and she's, so is this where the race is? Or do we run on this road? And I was like, it was so refreshing, because she'd never been there, had no clue what the course was. And sometimes, you know, sometimes going in with that is not a bad thing. How long before the race are you going to get there, and what are your plans?
So I'm still sorting out all the logistics, but I might go straight over from, I'll do 70.3 Worlds in South Africa, and given the amount of travel, I think it's going to be like 40 hours or something.
Wow.
Of travel. My coach recommended the closer I can get to Hawaii, the better off I'll be. Just use that recovery week to get there.
Right.
And so I probably will go straight to Kona.
Good move. That's a good move. Because that way it's about, what, 3 weeks or something?
Yeah, I think it's 5 weeks.
Oh, is it 5 weeks?
I think so.
Okay.
5 or 6, yeah. I'll get to know it very well.
You'll know every aspect of the course. You'll know the swim. You'll be like, you'll be a native. You'll have all the different tattoos. You'll be good. That'd be good for you.
But, you know, it's, I do think there is when you don't know, it's almost better sometimes.
Then
you just, that naivete it can be powerful.
Well, and I think the other thing of that is obviously you're going to be up there in the swim, because that's, you know, you've got a great swim background. And then you're going to.
Oh, I'm no Lucy, though.
Huh?
I think we're all be seeing Lucy's feet.
Oh, yeah. Lucy, yeah, Laura, yeah. Brandon, and yeah, those guys will be in a little bit of different
types. Different level.
Different level. Yeah. But there'll be a huge group with everybody else. And then it's just going to be a matter of, okay, how comfortable do I feel with the pace on the bike? And you'll either end up like, I doubt if you'll end up by yourself. There'll probably be another little group. But sometimes when you're in that position where people get carried away at the front and they forget that it's 112 miles and they start racing because they're not used to having all these people around them. They're used to being at a pro Ironman or 70.3 where there's 6, 7, 8 athletes, not 48. So sometimes being by yourself, I think that helped Heather Jackson a number of times because she didn't get, or Rennie, and they didn't get caught up in the racing at the front because they were sort of moving their way up from being off the pace a little bit. Like, now you're going to off the swim, but you're going to be up there at the swim. So you'll just have to make that decision at the time, which you will. I love the way you raced Frankfurt, where you just, Sarah Crowley goes by, and rather than get caught up with that, you focused on your power, you focused on your nutrition, and just did what needed to be done. Because that race, especially in Kona, nothing really gets going until, you know, halfway through the run is really where things start to change a lot.
Yeah, I think I have followed enough Kona races to see that you can cost yourself a great race by being too excited on the bike.
No question.
And I get it. People like racing. A couple weeks before Frankfurt, I was at a wedding, and Winnie happened to be there, and she's like, "Sarah, just remember, when you do Frankfurt, it's a long day. Be patient. Do your own thing." And, I think that's just, that has to be Ironman. It's okay to get excited probably the second half of the run, but up until that point, you have a lot of distance that you can cover, and if you pace it wrong, your day is probably destroyed.
Right, right. Now, the other side, the other side of that race is, for the first, 15 years of the Ironman, it was all about the Americans. And I think the last American woman, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, I think Karen Smyers in 95 might have been the last American woman to win in Kona. So it's been a long time. And obviously now you and Heather Jackson, and there's a number of Americans who would like to change that. This year, are you going there thinking, "Hey, listen, I'm coming here. I'm as fit as anybody else. I don't know how many times I'm going to come to this race. I'm going for it." Or is it, "I want to come and just get through this thing and do as well as I can, but I have no thoughts on winning"?
I think if you look at, it's highly unusual to see an athlete of Daniela's caliber make the jump that she has this year. And you have to have that in the back of your mind. She's already been a world champion. She's already been great. And the past couple months, I think she's demonstrated she's brought things up a level. Like I said, that's highly unusual.
It is.
But, the rest of us are probably cognizant of that and will not do anything other than try to race our own races as a result.
Right.
So that being said, enough can go wrong in a race where you have to put together your best performance because you never know what's going to happen at the front. Nobody is unbeatable, especially over an Ironman where so many things can happen. All I can do is do the best I can in the next couple of months to put myself in a position to have my best race possible. And I think if I totally nailed on the day, it's not unrealistic to think that I could be, a contender for a podium spot.
No question.
I can't say anything more than that. It's the same thing that drove me, in the lead up to the Rio Games was all I could do. I wanted to put myself in a position where on the day I could fight for a podium. And, that's what drove me for 4 years, the belief that I could be there. And I think, this is a far more compressed period of time, but the next couple months I need to approach my training if everything falls into place and I stay healthy and I do a good job with my training and on race day, that it's not outside of possibility that I could end up on the podium.
No question.
That's all I can do.
We've seen it before, right? We saw Chrissy Wellington come over and win 3 years in a row, and everybody just assumed she was going to win in 2010, and then you looked in transition, there's her bike, but no Chrissy. You're like, yeah. Oh my God. And then last year, nobody would have bet against Jan Frodeno winning, winning his third in a row. And then, you know, had back issues and a bike and a run and ended up walking a big chunk of it. So that nobody's immune. Anything can happen to anybody, anytime. Right. And if you put together your race, you never know.
Yeah.
Love it. Hey, Sarah, you are the best. Congrats on everything. It's your transition has been perfect from the short course to the long course. I love your progression from last year, focus 70.3. This year, okay, I'm gonna do a full, but I'm gonna keep them. I'm not gonna do a lot of them. I'm gonna try to nail the ones I need to do, and then get to Kona as fresh as possible.
It's an investment. It's an investment in being able to enjoy Kona as a triathlete. And, you know, that's something that transcends, you know, the professional racing. I want to make the most of that experience. And, okay, so maybe I won't be out there on the underwear run. But I want to be fresh enough and excited enough to be able to soak it all in.
Right. You're going to love it. You're going to love every second of it.
I can't wait. It's going to be a blast.
You're going to be like, wait, I read about this. This is so cool. I'm out by the scenic point. I'm out by Kauai High. I'm at Javi. This is awesome. Every minute of it, you're going to be going, this is the stuff I've been reading about and watching videos about, and now I'm here.
Well, that's what I think what amateur athletes probably forget about is that pros are not immune to that the power of Kona.
Right.
I'm going to be as big of a tri geek as everybody else, where if it's your first time there, just that excitement of actually being there. So I think there might be other pros who don't have, you know, puppy energy, but I definitely have puppy energy. I'm going to be bouncing around, excited, wanting to take it all in, because it's something that, it's a race I respect so much. You know, it's been part of my formation as an athlete, is, you know, following it as a fan. And I think, it's a powerful race for a reason. Like, I cannot wait to see it.
Love it. Sarah, thanks so much for taking so much time. So is your amazing husband, Ben True, is he over in Europe racing now?
Yeah, he has London Diamond League tomorrow night, Saturday. So he's running the 5K, and he'll be back on Sunday. And he will be in Kona.
Awesome.
What's pretty fascinating is when I told him I wanted to do Ironman, the first thing was basically, well, you know you're going to have to qualify for Kona because I want to go and watch. We're both just huge sports fans, and he really enjoys following Kona every year with me, and, you know, he enjoys seeing, he definitely geeks out a little bit. He was in fumbles the whole time, but he geeks out a little bit over, he loves Lionel, he loves Jan. I think he's excited to see them race in person, excited. He loves sports, you know, like most of us. If you're an endurance athlete, you can appreciate another endurance sport.
Absolutely.
And this is part of our world.
Well, and depending, I'm sure Friday night, the night before, he'll be with you because this will be your first one. But if he feels like coming to our Thank God I'm Not Racing party that we have every year, he might need to come join us for a little bit, just because he, you know, might need to get out of the house just for a little bit.
Well, I might need him out of the house. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, exactly. 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 Yeah. Very cool. Sarah, you're going to have the best time ever.
I can't wait.
I look forward
to see you there.
It'll be great. We'll do our breakfast show there with Poncho Man, and you'll have a good time.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Sarah True has been our guest again. We're brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, VeloFix.com, Polar, Chase Your Destiny, Premium Plus Sports, the official travel partner of Tough Man Triathlon Series, USA-SwimRun.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We just sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million. Keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And until next time, remember, endurance lives